I Suck at Dating with Dean Unglert and Jared Haven, an iHeartRadio podcast.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to a new week of Help, I Suck at Dating. I'm currently lounging on a couch at Kaylin's apartment. Probably going to fall asleep halfway through the episode because it's so comfortable. Jared and I were just talking about how it's the most comfortable couch on the face of the earth.
Well, I'm pretty sure Tanner and Jade have that same couch, and it is fantastic. I'm currently in my mother-in-law's bedroom, so things are going pretty well for me.
Why did you move out of the office today?
Because the mic was set up here. It's pretty, this and the office are the best Wi-Fi spots. And I think Ashley just likes recording her podcast in here, and I wasn't going to move the equipment. So here I am. It's not that uncomfortable. It's a spacious room.
This is the room that you and Ashley sleep in?
No. This is my mother-in-law's room. She sleeps here alone because my father-in-law is quarantined still in the basement because he works at the hospital.
You don't find it awkward at all to be in your mother-in-law's bedroom?
I did at first, but now being quarantined to the house for over 2 months, I don't feel all that uncomfortable. It's fine.
Do you feel more or less comfortable if the bed is not made right now?
I think I'm pretty indifferent about it. I don't know if I feel any worse or better.
There's something about an unmade bed when you walk into the room that you're like, someone slept right there. And then when the bed is made, you're like, okay, like this is it's a fresh new palette, a new canvas. Just feels a little less invasive, I think, if you walk into a room that's got a made bed, you know?
Yeah.
That's one man's opinion.
Interesting. I don't know. I don't think I've really put too much thought into it, but you said you were pretty tired, but you're also tired today because you posted on your Instagram that you woke up at 4:30 in the morning to go golfing.
Yeah, I teed off at 5:46 a.m. today for earliest tee time I've ever had.
Why? Why not schedule a tee time for 11:15 in the morning?
I don't know. One of my buddies who I've been playing golf with lately said, hey, this is the only tee time they have available. Do you want to do it? And I was like, well, I mean, I got nothing else to do, so sure. Golf is like the first sport I can partake in with my leg, so it's like I want to kind of be doing it often. And I mean, I figured I could just get around and before I could came home and podcasted with you guys. So it was actually kind of nice. I mean, we were the first team out or first group out, so we didn't have to wait for anyone. We finished around in under 3 hours. You know, I think I might start teeing off 5:46 more often.
So you're saying it was worth it. It was worth being the first people to tee off. It was worth waking up at 4:30 in the morning.
I will say when my alarm went off at 4:30 in the morning, I was like, there's no way I'm going to get out of bed and go golfing.
Yes.
And then I snoozed it, or I thought that I had snoozed my alarm, but in reality, I turned it off. And so I rolled over at like 4:48, and I was like, wait, it's been so long since my alarm went off. I'm probably going to miss the tee time now. I realized I still had time, so I woke up.
You were probably just delusional because it's 4:30 in the morning. You're hallucinating.
Gosh, it was worse. Yesterday when I got home from running some errands, I ordered a full Domino's pizza with pepperoni, sausage, and extra jalapenos. And I just smothered the whole thing in ranch. And I ate the whole thing in one sitting. Literally in 20 minutes, I ate this entire pizza that was just covered in all these things. And so my stomach hasn't been feeling well.
Oh, can't imagine why.
So I woke up at like 1 a.m., spent a good 30 minutes in the bathroom. I wanted to make sure I had enough time this morning to probably hit the bathroom again before I left. So it's been, you know, it's been an eventful 24 hours for me.
How has Kaylin felt about the past 24 hours? Did you wake her up this morning?
She was awake. Yeah, I think I accidentally nudged her when I woke up.
Dude, if I woke up at 4:30 in the morning to go golfing and woke up Ashley, she'd stab me in my sleep.
Yeah, I'm sure she wasn't pleased. She's just, you know.
How was it going golfing? Did you feel uncomfortable at all? Because now things are starting to open up a little bit.
Yeah, so the way that the golf courses are set up, at least the ones that I've been to, you're in your own cart, you wear a mask the whole time, you don't touch the flag stick, you know, the ball doesn't go all the way in, so it's still pretty contactless in terms of being around people, which is like, you know, it's probably slightly less safe, obviously, than like staying at home because you're not seeing anyone when you're at home, but it's one of the safer activities, in my opinion, that you could be doing. I don't really feel weird doing it, but I could see the argument being made against it. But I mean, that's just what seems to be happening. Things are slowly opening up. You know, golf, I've been golfing for 2 weeks now, it seems like. There was just a NASCAR race this past weekend. There was golf, yes. golf was a couple days ago.
Tom Brady practiced with a few members of his Tampa Bay Buccaneers today, which was a huge step because Florida is starting to reopen. And even like I heard yesterday, New York, California, they're saying that starting in June, they're going to allow sports teams to play in stadiums, empty stadiums. But that's obviously a huge step. Dude, I just need to step my toe back into society. That's what's killing me right now. Because like the past 2.5 months, I've just had this mindset of stay home. Don't be near anybody because they all have coronavirus. And I really need to get myself out of this mindset. Like yesterday, Ashley and I went to go get a McFlurry because, you know, you got to win some battles during COVID-19. And I like, honestly, in my head, I was like, okay, this is a good thing because I'm going to wear a mask. They'll be wearing a mask. Ooh, I hit my mic. Like go through the drive-thru, don't have a panic attack. And yet still, like when the guy was handing it to me, it was like this moment of like, okay, you're just going to grab it. You're going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Everything's going to work out. So like, I need to start doing more steps like that, which sucks.
What flavor did you get?
M&M, duh.
Oh,
dude, don't tell me you're an Oreo guy.
Sorry, what flavor of McFlurry do you like to get?
I've never had one.
You've never had a McFlurry? Are you American?
No, I guess not.
You got, that's like, you know, McDonald's. Got to get a
I was actually going to ask you, like, what really is a McFlurry? Is it just like a milkshake?
You've never had a McFlurry?
No.
Yeah, it's probably 3,000 calories in a tiny cup, but it's the most delicious thing ever. You've never had a McFlurry?
It's vanilla ice cream, and then it's pretty much vanilla ice cream. You can get either M&Ms in it, or you can get Oreos in it if you're weird. M&Ms is the way to go.
It's not just vanilla ice cream. There's some sort of special secret sauce that McDonald's does to it.
It's McDonald's, so that it's like vanilla ice cream on steroids, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think ice cream is the worst dessert you can ever partake in.
What's your
choice? In terms
choice?
Of flavor or what, just health-wise?
No, it's just like ice cream melts, so you really only have like 2 minutes to enjoy that dessert. So you're inhaling it, so you don't really get to enjoy it. And then by the time you finish it, you're like, I still need more. So then you eat like a whole carton, and then you never feel good about yourself because you ate it in like 5 minutes because it was melting all over you and then it was getting messy. And then you, like, if you're in your car, then you like leave your thing in the car and then it's just like a puddle of milk. It's just like, grab a cookie and be happy with your life.
Who leaves their ice cream in a car, first and foremost?
Yeah, what the hell are you doing with your life, Tori?
I don't know. I love
I'm a big ice cream. I'm with you, Dean. I'm a big ice cream guy. Dean, are you more of an Oreo or M&M McFlurry guy?
I'm an Oreo McFlurry guy, like every sane American.
Why? Why do you choose Oreo over M&Ms?
Because Oreos just, in general, have a much better flavor than M&Ms. I also don't like how the M&Ms, like, they lose their color when they sit in the ice cream for too long. You bite into them, sometimes they get a little too hard, and then they also are like dry on the inside. It's just not a good experience.
All right, well, we agree to disagree. Anyway, should we get into like, I don't know, dating topics? Or what our podcast
Do we have any dating
about?
Topics we want to talk about today?
We have a couple things. Well, Tori has one that she really wants to talk about.
Well, I always send a rundown the night before, and then
I read the rundown.
Oh, did you? Because you would know it's a yes.
I was leading Jared into answering the question for the listeners out there that haven't read the rundown. Obviously, I've read the rundown. We're going to talk about Kate and Mary Kate Olsen and her husband who are getting a divorce, and she's got an ironclad prenuptial agreement with him. And would you ever ask someone to sign a prenuptial agreement? Jared, did you ask Ashley to sign a prenuptial agreement?
All right, let's
don't
start
ever
from
ask
the beginning.
If I didn't read the rundown or not, Tori, okay?
I think he just read it for the first time. Let's be honest.
Well, he read the headline, so it's not totally.
Dean's a headline reader. He's that guy who like reads a headline on Twitter and then regurgitates that, like being like, oh, you know what else? And then he says the headline without reading
the clickbait where you're like, is that true? No.
I did see the headline, Mary Kate Olsen has an ironclad prenup. And I was like, I think reading that headline is enough for me to not have to read that article.
Yeah. So I'll give a rundown and then you guys can go off into the questions about this. But Mary Kate Olsen and her husband, Pierre Olivier, I don't know if that's how you say it, Sarkozy, are splitting up. And apparently Mary-Kate's prenup is ironclad. And basically he like kicked her out of apartment and all this stuff. But Ashley Olsen has an estimate net worth of $500 million between them. So she's like, obviously, yes, I have a prenup. And I would just like to know. So let's start from the beginning. Ashley Olsen, Mary-Kate Olsen and her ex have a 17-year age gap. So he's 50 years old, and then that makes her what? 33.
33.
have you or would you ever date older?
Yes.
I think it'd be challenging to date someone 17 years older, but I mean, I have dated older, yeah.
Well, Dean, you're 28, right?
29.
Thank 29. You God, you're old. If okay, you're old, I mean, yeah, I know. Yeah. Really dating myself on that one. So right now, if you were single and you weren't with Kaylin, if you were to date someone 17 years older than you, you'd be dating someone who's 46. Do you think you could do that?
Oh man, I don't know. Actually, that's a tough one. My brother used to date a woman who was probably 20 plus years older than him, and they had a great relationship.
I think it all depends on what your goals are, like kids, family planning, because that really comes into factor when you think about age. But I could definitely, I could definitely date someone older. When I was in my early to mid 20s, I found it incredibly sexy. Someone who's in like their mid to late 30s.
You know what's funny about that too is you found that sexy, and I bet you when you were dating them, they found you like your spirit creepy. Uplifting and not creepy, but like they're probably like, oh, he's young and he's like fun and you know this energetic guy, and like that you guys liked each other for the same reasons in a way. You know what I mean?
Guys love older girls. I mean, why do you like not to go down this path, but like. MILFs are a very popular Google search for a man in his 20s.
Is that true? I guess I haven't Google searched. Oh, MILF
please.
In a while.
Well, I'm sure you were a fan of MILFs.
I mean, I'm familiar with the category.
Well, let's put it this way. Jennifer Garner is 48 years old. Dean, could you ever date or marry Jennifer Garner?
Money aside.
I don't think it's really fair to characterize celebrities into that because Jennifer Garner, like Jennifer Aniston. What did I say? Rachel Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston. Her name on Friends was Rachel, wasn't it?
Yeah, those girls are like forever young in a sense, and they're going to be beautiful until the day they die when they're 90. You know what I mean? Just like men, like Brad Pitt. Like Tori, you're 24. You could date Brad Pitt even though he's like 68. You know what I mean?
I couldn't though.
Really?
So hold on. You're telling me that if Brad Pitt slid into your DMs and said, hey, let's go grab dinner on Friday night, you'd say no.
I would go to dinner, but I couldn't marry him.
So what if he wanted a second date? And what if he was like, hey, I had a really good time. I could see this going somewhere.
I would date him, but I could not marry him. Like you could easily say you could date somebody older for sure, but I could never marry someone older because... Could you imagine like being like, hey, we're going to go watch the Super Bowl at my friend's house and then like bringing him? He would be so unentertained by our conversation or my life where I was at that point compared to him.
If you wanted to bring Brad Pitt to my Super Bowl party, I 100% would take that with open arms.
Yeah, I'd be fine.
I guess the only reservation with an age gap that large is like he's going to die and you're going to be 35 and a widow. That would be kind of a bummer. But... with most age gaps, like we see
that
like
went
Mary
dark
Kate,
fast.
I'm just trying to think practically here. With Mary Kate, it's like, you know, she's 17 years younger. Women typically outlive men. So she would be, you know, let's say the guy lives to be 80. That's a good life. She would be 63. And then it's like, what does she want to? She doesn't want to be single and 63. That's kind of like the worst situation, you know?
Do you view it differently if a man dates a younger girl versus a woman dating a younger guy?
Yeah, I think it's viewed differently, at least by society. If a guy is dating a younger girl, sometimes I think that's like more expected, and it depends how young you go, but it can be kind of skeevy, you know?
I agree. For some reason in my head, when a guy older guy dates a younger girl, I'm like, ugh. And then yet if an older girl dates a younger guy, I'm like, good for her.
Yeah, exactly. Why is that, I wonder?
I have no idea. I think probably because as a guy, I just know a guy's mentality. And I'm like, you're just going for the young, hot girl. You're
the
not
naive.
Looking for the emotional connection. Yeah, where a girl, a woman, an older woman, is like going after someone who's keeping her young. And I'm like, you know what? Good for you, girl. You know, you go. I'm probably wrong, but for some reason that's immediately where my head goes.
I mean, no, I agree with you. Whether it's wrong or right, I'm in the same camp, so hopefully it's right.
Do you think a guy who dates younger, especially like 10 years or younger, can ever starts out with pure intentions in dating that person?
Of course. How long were these two married for?
That's a good question. Let me look that up.
Wasn't it a while? I felt like it was.
That's true, I guess. And the fact that he was willing to sign a prenup means he probably had pretty good intentions even going into the marriage.
Yeah.
But I see Tori's point. I see, like, you know, if let's say you're 35 and you meet a girl who's 21, I don't think that you're like, oh, this girl is going to be my wife. I think you're thinking like, wow, that girl is young and hot. And I haven't seen one of those in a while. You know?
Yeah, but what if you're like 48 and she's 31?
That's fine, I think.
I agree. I view that differently.
Dating in your 20s is always just like one of those things where it's like, okay, what's going to happen? Like, it's kind of
especially in your early
shoot.
20s.
Right. It's always just a crapshoot. Like, are people seriously dating? Are you just dating to get on to the next part of your life? But then once you get into your 30s, it's more serious. I don't know.
But that's with like, I feel like everybody in their early 20s, you know, or early to mid 20s, whether you're dating someone who's also in their early to mid 20s or you're dating someone older, it's always that question of like, well, how serious can they take it? And I'm not saying it's wrong or right, because I also think there are people in their early to mid 20s that can settle down early and can be in a relationship. You hear all the time about high school sweethearts and it's very sweet. But from my own personal opinion, I do think it's probably better to get married later in life and to experience individuality early on.
Let me ask you this. I'm 29. Kaylin is 25. Does that make me skeevy?
What a creep. Four years?
I feel like it might be.
No,
she turns 26. 29,
25? No way.
She turns 26 in a month. Okay. I think so. For one more month, it's a little skeevy, but.
I don't think it's that skeevy. I don't think there's that much of an age difference. Plus, your personality, dude, you're like 25.
I don't know if I should take that as a compliment or not. It's funny. There was this kid when I was
probably
getting
an insult.
When I was getting my skydive license, there was this this kid who was with us, this like YouTube kid, and he was, I think, 19 at the time. And after a couple of days of like hanging out and getting our licenses, he goes, "How old are you?" I think I was like 27 at the time. And he goes, "Oh, that's so much older than I thought you were. I thought you were going to be like 21. And I go, "Well, why? Because I'm like so mature." And he goes, "No, just because the way that you act, like you're kind of an idiot." I was like, "Oh, shit. I get where you're coming from, though, you know."
So to jump into the next part of this, so they were married for 5 years, and prior to getting married, they signed a prenup. What are your thoughts on prenups?
I gotta be honest, I don't know exactly what a prenup is, which answers the question if I've signed a prenup or not. I'm assuming that means if we ever get divorced, my stuff is my stuff and your stuff is your stuff.
So it's a prenuptial agreement. So it's anything you guys figure out with your assets, or it could even go down to your dog and like who your dog goes to if you ever got a divorce. So everything is just, it's an agreement that you make prior to your marriage. And then you make it legal with a lawyer. You guys both sign it. And then that way, if you ever did divorce, you guys kind of disperse it the way you agreed to it in the beginning.
Whenever I think of a prenuptial agreement, I just think of that episode of Seinfeld where George is trying to have Susan break up with him. And Jerry was like, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
Ask her to sign a prenup and then she'll leave you. And then he asks her and she laughs in his face and she's like, I have way more stuff than you. Yeah, sure. I'll sign it. Yeah, of course. I'm totally down for signing a prenup. Why not? Why are people against it, you think? Because it sets a bad bad vibe already in the beginning of the marriage?
I think it kind of sets a bad tone. I think the only time... I'm sure there are plenty of times when they get signed or for many different reasons, but I think the main reason is when there's a large discrepancy in the earners. So like, let's say the girl makes a lot more than the guy, it seems like in this case, and it's like such a big difference that she's like, I'm going to protect my assets here by doing this. If anything were to go south, I think what the bad thing about it is, it's like by signing a prenuptial agreement, you're basically admitting to the idea that divorce is a possibility, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like, does anybody really think divorce is a, how do I phrase this? Nobody thinks they're getting divorced when they get married, but it happens all the time. I do think the idea that things will never change might be a little naive. And so I'm not against signing a prenup.
Right. Well, I think that's like the logical way to look at it. But a lot of people, I mean, you do say till death do us part. So you're kind of going against that by saying in the event that instead of death doing us part, we just want to part on our own terms. I want to make sure that I have my money. I think that's kind of like the underlying issue with it all is like, hey, I love you and I want to get married to you. But also if it doesn't work out between us, I want to make sure I keep all my money. You know what I mean? I personally wouldn't mind. I guess I wouldn't mind signing a prenup. It's hard to put myself in that situation, obviously, because I don't even see, I don't necessarily know where my life is going, but I don't see why I would have any issue signing a prenup.
Here's a question for you. Do you think that the person who wants to sign a prenup should get married in the first place? Because like you said, if you're willing to take a vow of saying to death till us part, how do you say that? I've said it. I don't even remember it. Death.
Till death do us part.
Thank you. Till death do us part. Wow. It's been a little while. Actually, only in like 7 months. But if somebody's willing to say that and then right around the same time saying, well, in case it doesn't work out, we should sign a prenup. Do you think that person should get married?
It's a great point. And I think that it's something worth talking about. I agree with what you're thinking, where it's like, why are they getting married if they even have an inkling or a possibility that it doesn't work out like they want it to? But I guess then it's like, why do anything? I don't know. I guess it could go either way.
Well, let's think about it like this for a minute. Okay, there's two scenarios that kind of popped up in my head. Obviously, you don't go in expecting to divorce when you sign a prenup, but there is a chance that someone could cheat. So let's say you're in a marriage and you're so happy and then a guy cheats, decides to leave you, and then you're left, or, you know, a girl cheats and decides to leave you. Let's say like you're married to someone and she cheats on you, but she's like the breadwinner of the house. So now you're having to adjust your whole lifestyle because your spouse selfishly decided to leave. And now you didn't sign a prenup or anything. So they're like, sorry, I'm actually in love with this younger stallion, and leaves and hops ship. So now you're like, okay, well, I have two kids beneath me that now I have to provide for. And yeah, there's child support. But what would you do in that scenario? You know, that kind of can happen.
I don't know what I would do in that scenario. I guess when you were saying that, my mind started drifting off and thinking about what would happen if you were the person that was being supported in the marriage, the other person cheated, the bread earner, quote unquote, cheated, and then you wanted to get a divorce, but you had a prenup signed. So by divorcing that person, then you're basically just making yourself broke again. Then what do you do? That's like a weird situation to be into. Marriage is just stupid. No one should ever get married. Jared and Ashley aside, they're going to be the last marriage of all time because people just should stop getting married altogether. I don't know. I sometimes do.
Yeah. So you're sometimes married.
I'm just kidding. I don't know.
No, I agree. Like, listen, at the end of the day, how I honestly feel about it is I think that it's okay to sign a prenup. I think it's okay to possibly be aware that things might change down the road, that you guys might get divorced, as horrible as it is to even think about early in the stages of marriage. You know, I'm always the type of person that says, just, you know, prepare for the worst. That's it. Like, hopefully it never comes to that. But if it ever does, like Tori said, God forbid something awful happened within your relationship, at least you're somewhat prepared for it. So that's my advice.
I know we're wrapping it, but I would love to know, Jared, why you did not sign a prenup, or did you and Ashley ever have a conversation about it?
I remember we were talking about it jokingly at one point, but I don't think we ever seriously talked about it, which we probably should, because once we started, even once we really started dating, once we got engaged, we started kind of combining our money. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I know a lot of couples who married couples who still have separate bank accounts. But we just decided to kind of like lump sum our money and then move forward together. So I guess in that aspect, we probably should sign a prenup. I'm pretty sure, though, if I asked Ashley to sign a prenup, I don't know how she'd react. If I seriously asked her, you know what we should do? Maybe I should secretly record her while I ask the question and I'm 100% serious about it and see what her true reaction would be, and then we'll post it to Help I Suck at Dating Instagram.
It's gonna be the exact same Costanza moment. She makes more money than you.
She does. So she'd probably laugh in my face. Yeah, give me the papers. I'll sign them.
Yeah, exactly.
My company's name is actually Mr. Ashley I Incorporated. So that just tells you my life.
Kaylin makes more money than me too. So it'd be the exact same situation.
That's awesome.
Wait, so let me ask you just a question that's kind of tangential. So you don't have your own bank account anymore? You guys just every dollar you make gets put into a collective pool?
We do have separate bank accounts, but we have she knows what's in mine and I know what's in hers. So technically we don't have a joint bank account. We're not that advanced. I don't think you and Kaylin do, right? You guys have just joint phone plans?
No, we have a joint bank account, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you told me this before. Yes, because then you guys put in money for like future vacations and travels and stuff like that.
Yeah, and like for instance, Kaylin and I will do like an ad for like dog food or something like that. What we agreed on was all of that money goes into the joint bank account. And like, so Pappy got his teeth removed a couple of weeks ago. That surgery was like $2,000. Neither of us really paid for that. We just used the money that we made for his, you know, branded post on Instagram for that teeth removal surgery.
How is Pappy doing after the teeth removal?
Oh my God, he's a puppy again, dude. He's regained so much spunk. All his quirkiness is back. He's just running around. He's the happiest little dude ever. It's the best. And his tongue limps out of his mouth sometimes too, and he's like laying down. It's the funniest thing in the world.
Aw, could you imagine that you guys almost didn't keep that dog?
Yeah, Kaylin couldn't imagine it. Kaylin's so attached to that dog, and I mean rightfully so. He's the cutest dog I've ever seen in my life, but they definitely have a bit more special of a bond than him and I do.
I'm just like
that's a cute little dog, and he's like, hey, that's like a fun hairy dude to like pet me every once in a while. But in reality, they're like their mom and son.
Yeah, he's a mama's boy.
He's a mama's boy for sure.
That's adorable.
How are the dogs over there doing?
I relate. They're doing fine. They're doing great. Lois is going to be depressed when we get out of here. She's got a huge backyard here. She's got a friend in Ethel. She's loving life. She goes on walks multiple times a day. I mean, we take her on walks, but the backyard is all the difference in the world. She gets to run around. She has another dog. There's everybody's home constantly. There's always somebody home. So when we go back to the apartment and we have to leave her alone, she's going to freak. And it's quite sad. I feel bad for her. But we do have to take a little break. We do have some very special guests coming up. So Dean and I are going to play a little game of 7 minutes in heaven. No, we're not going to be in the closet together, even though that could be fun too. But where we're going to be able to talk about things that we want to talk about for 7 minutes. And I have a guest coming on the podcast. I don't know what Tori and Dean are doing something back and forth while I'm trying to be professional here. Trying to be a pro.
Jared, you're so good. These 7 minutes are so heavenly.
Dean, I got to be honest. If I was in a closet with you, I'd probably only last about 2.5.
Wow.
Come on. Hey, there he is. There he is. But we have a special guest coming up. He is one of my favorite author of all time, Ben Mezrich. He's the author of Bitcoin Billionaires, The Accidental Billionaires, which was the book that Aaron Sorkin adapted his screenplay for The Social Network off of. He also wrote Bringing Down the House, which was made into the movie 21, which was obviously a huge success. Ben Mezrich's coming on the podcast. I'm super, super excited to talk to him, ask him many questions. He has a new novella serialized story on the Boston Globe called The Mechanic that is out right now that you guys can all read. But he's going to be coming up shortly after the break. Dean, what are you going to be talking about for your 7 minutes in heaven?
I don't freaking know, Jared. But I'll tell you what, you don't want to miss it. So stick around after this break and we'll dive right into our 14 minutes in heaven. All right, we are back with more Help I Suck at Dating. And just before we went to break, Jared had mentioned that this week we're trying something new. We are both going to partake in our 7 minutes in heaven. And what that means, because it's a weird idea, I think that Tori, you thought of this idea, right?
Oh, I wish. It was Amy Sugarman.
It was Amy Sugarman. You're right.
Shout out to Amy.
We love her. She's fantastic and talented and is very gifted in the things that she does. So,
and employs us. So We're very grateful.
Yes, thank you for the paychecks. So what the idea is behind this, essentially we're going to talk about something we're interested in for 7 minutes. And the essence of the 7 minutes in heaven is these are things that we like. And so we're going to enjoy talking about them for 7 minutes. The challenging thing from my perspective is I like a lot of things. I don't love a lot of things. I don't have very many passions. I've got a lot of interests. And so it's like when I talked about this in our group chat, it's when you're in high school or college and the teacher says, I want you to write a 10-page essay, and they don't give you something to write about. And then you're racking your brain and trying to figure out what you're supposed to write about. And you just can't figure that part out. And so I've been racking my brain nonstop since we decided we were going to do the 7 minutes in heaven bit, which I think partly is Jared's fault because he has this great guest who's going to be coming up in a little bit. And Jared, and we found a way to work that into this podcast. And then that put the pressure on me to then think of something to talk about for 7 minutes. And by the way, I started the timer at the top of this whole monologue and we're already a minute and a half in. So I only got five minutes.
To go. I was going to say, all right, ready? I'm about to set my 7 minute timer.
No, the timer's been going.
See, Dean, you're the opposite of me where I don't have that. I mean, I have interests, but I don't have that many. But the things that I am interested in, I'm very passionate about. So I could speak a lot, as you guys have known from my Rob Thomas, Tom Brady
yes.
days.
You are interested in less things, but you put more into those fewer things that you're interested in.
I'm a simple mind, really.
I'm a simple dude with a simple mind who needs simple things. I think the thing that I wanted to talk about during the 7 minutes, and by the way, we only have just under 5 minutes left.
You still have 6 minutes. Thank you very much.
For a long time, especially coming off of the show the first time and realizing that my life was going to change pretty greatly. And in essence, kind of hit like a lottery ticket, right? I thought about how I was going to take a year off of work and I was going to pursue the thing that I found over that year as my passion and my purpose. And a year came and a year went, and I wasn't any closer to having that passion or purpose understood. And I was always, you know, anxious and stressed out about the idea that I wasn't sure what I was doing. And I was kind of aimlessly moving through this thing that we call life in a directionless state. And I wasn't going anywhere. And while I still am that person and I still am doing that thing, what I've came to realize is that there are a lot of people that are like that. And that I think that we should start as a society kind of preaching that that is an okay thing for us to be doing. And that sometimes it takes lack of direction and lack of, not like lack of passions, but sometimes you learn a lot about yourself in those moments where you don't necessarily know what you're doing. So for me, for instance, like I said, you know, I used to be a recruiter with a great company here in Los Angeles, but once I realized, I guess I didn't have to do that, quote unquote, for the paycheck, I stopped doing that because it wasn't my passion. And so then I started doing other things. But for a while, I was just doing stupid things like partying with my friends on the weekends and, I don't know, going on golfing trips with my friends while I still do enjoy golf. I don't think that was ever, it's like kind of like a means to an end. Like golf, I'm not going to be on the tour. I'm not going to be a tour player at any point in my life. So I wasn't necessarily like pursuing my purpose in life in that sense. So what I started doing was just doing the things that I always thought of about myself. So I started rock climbing more, which is, you know, I'm not saying I'm passionate about rock climbing, but it's something I really enjoy. I like to do a few big trips a year. I started obviously skydiving, got my license with that. And that's something that I've wanted to do ever since I was a kid, but I'm not passionate about it, even though I do thoroughly enjoy it. I started photography a lot more, which, you know, I really enjoy that, but I wouldn't say I'm passionate about it either. I started traveling a lot more I guess that's probably my passion is travel. But even like amidst this whole coronavirus shutdown, as much as I miss travel and I yearn to be traveling, I'm like perfectly okay just like sitting on the couch all day. So do I consider travel a passion? I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh on myself. But my point is, I want to, I guess, normalize the idea that just because you're not like fulfilling your life's purpose in this moment doesn't mean that you won't eventually find it. Like I'm 29 years old and I have every ounce of possibility at my fingertips, but I still haven't found out exactly what I need to be doing or should be doing and what I'm working towards, you know. And like, while that's terrifying because I feel like I might be wasting my time and my breath, it's still kind of nice knowing that I'm not in it alone and there are millions and millions and millions of other people out there as well. So that's kind of like my long-winded way of saying, just because you don't know what you're doing or where you're going or what you're working for or towards, it doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. It just means that that's going to come later in life, in my opinion. And so now, as I'm 5 minutes and 50 seconds into my 7 minutes in heaven, but let's be honest, before I get to the 7 minute mark, no one lasts 7 minutes. 7 minutes is in heaven, in reality, is more like 2 minutes in heaven, especially for high schoolers. So I just wanted to make that clear.
I wouldn't last 15 seconds. You kidding me?
And so that's my long spiel of, I don't have these things that I'm super passionate about. While I have my interests and my hobbies and, of course, my like relationship and all these things, I don't have like this one. I don't have my Rob Thomas. I don't have my Tom Brady. I don't have those things where I would like, you know, eat, sleep, breathe, bleed, and die for. Because I just think that that's kind of my personality, is I just don't care deeply about a lot of things.
Die for Tom
you
Brady.
Would, and that's fantastic. And I'm envious. I'm envious that you care so.
I'd take a bullet. For
I'm
Tom
envious
Brady.
That you care so much about things like that, because I sometimes struggle to. And I think that sometimes it's actually kind of a bad thing for me to just be like so nonchalant and blasé about almost everything in my life. I would say like 99.9, if not 100% of the things in my life, I kind of just don't really care about, which is not really the best way to be moving through life. So I'm envious of your ability to focus on those passions and interests so greatly. But I also want...
Well, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself.
But I guess my...
I certainly don't think you should...
My purpose of this whole thing, as I've said earlier in it as well, is to tell the people out there that might be listening to this that if they are on a kind of more on my side of things rather than yours, that it's an okay thing to be doing, because it's not your responsibility to have it figured out by any set time. It's just, you know, keep focusing on the things that you're interested in, and maybe one day you'll develop a passion for it, which I'm hoping for myself.
I want to ask you a question about that. And also, I don't want you to think, or anybody to think, just because I have passions about things that I have things figured out, because I have zero figured out, my friend, as Ashley will attest to. But my question for you is, and this is something that I kind of believe in, do you think life is more about this grand overall scheme of finding your purpose, or do you think it's just kind of a series of moments that you collect and adds up to become?
I personally think that's a collection of moments, and the randomness of us even being here is enough of a reason for us to be content with our existence itself. But I do think that there is a lot of pressure put on ourselves, that we put on ourselves and that others put on ourselves, you know, like it's gotta be hard for, like a business major or a communications major to go to school, graduate, and then see their friends who are like nursing majors or doctors or lawyers or scientists to like have this unflinching passion for the thing that they chose to focus on when they were 18. Because these like broad degrees like business and communications, while they're fantastic and they take a lot of work, they don't necessarily breed the same, I guess, work ethic or like interest in like things like sciences and mathematics and like those types of things, you know what I mean? So it's like, while comparisons totally are always a bad thing, it's just difficult to be like super okay with not necessarily knowing exactly what you're doing, you know.
But I completely agree with you, but I would also say that those people that make it look like they had everything figured out and went to school for something they've always wanted to do and, you know, worked very hard and now they're there, I firmly believe that at some point, or probably still do, they've had doubts about what they've been working hard towards. Is it worth it? Is it something I want to do? I'm more passionate about that. I should have done this. Everybody has doubts, you know? Everybody second guesses themselves. And so if you're second guessing yourself, or you're unsure where you're headed or what you've been doing, you're not alone.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I completely agree with what you're saying, Dean.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. So I hope you guys enjoyed my 7 minutes in heaven.
I loved it. All right, welcome back to Help I Suck at Dating. We have a very special guest who's on the line right now. He's one of my favorite authors of all time. He's the author of Bringing Down the House, the inside story of the six MIT students who took down Vegas for Millions, which was, of course, turned into the hit movie 21. He was also the writer of The Accidental Billionaires, which was adapted into my favorite movie of all time, The Social Network. He wrote The Bitcoin Billionaires, one of my favorite books, and now he has a novella serialized story in the Boston Globe called The Mechanic. Ben Mezrick. Ben, how you doing, buddy? Thank you so much for coming on.
I am awesome. Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of you guys as well, so this is cool to meet. This is the closest I'll ever get to being on any Bachelor franchise, so this is good. This is good.
Well, you've been married for 13 years, so it'd be weird if you were on Bachelor.
it would. But I don't think I was likely even before that, so it's nice to be here.
How long have you been a fan of the show?
We have been watching... I would think I was good friends with Andrew Firestone. So how far back does that go?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, somewhere in the mid
2000s. Yeah, I met him. I was already a fan of the show for probably 3 years and then met him at Sundance and became friends with him. So, yeah, it's been a long time. I've been watching Bachelor, Bachelorette, and all of the different variations. So, yeah, it's awesome, man. It's cool. It's great. It's great storytelling, you know. I don't know how much is produced and how much is real. I'm assuming a lot of it is produced, but it's the way they capture a story from beginning to end is very novel-like, so it's cool.
Oh, totally. It's very real, as you can tell. Both Dean and myself are in relationships from it, but you know, the producers are there for a reason. They make a good television show. But Ben, I wanted to talk about The Mechanic first, because that all 21 chapters, I believe, are already out on the Boston Globe website. And so I've read it. It's an incredible story. It's like very Da Vinci Code, like National Treasure. But tell us a little bit about The Mechanic and why you decided to write a serialized story. And what I mean by that is about 2 weeks ago when this first came out, you released about two chapters a day until the story was completed. Why did you want to do that?
Yeah, so the Boston Globe came to me. You know, they're the big newspaper in Massachusetts. And they asked if you know, I would be willing to do this. It's basically writing a book in 2 weeks. You put out a chapter or two a night, and the whole city and basically the whole, anybody who wants to go online and read it is like a giant book club. And it was also being published in the paper. So it started on the cover of the Sunday Globe 2 weeks ago and has run every day for 2 weeks and just ended its run yesterday, basically. But it's all there online. So if you go to bostonglobe.com, you can binge read just like a book. And it really is like a national treasure thriller. Takes place on the Freedom Trail in the streets of Boston, goes back in history to the beginnings of America and American history. But I wanted to do it because we're all sick of all this crazy dark news. Like you pick up the newspaper and it's just ugly story after ugly story. And it's nice to have a diversion. So anybody who was interested in seeing something different in the newspaper was able to read it. And it became this huge thing. I mean, you know, it ended up being the most read thing on the Boston Globe, and it's become this huge book club, basically. And it was a diversion for me. You know, I'm stuck at home just like everybody else is, and this took my mind off of all the madness, and it's been just a great experience. And I always wanted to write the Da Vinci Code, so for me it's a great way of trying to write a thriller like that. And it will be a series. I'm doing a sequel now. Hollywood
already
has come really into it. We sent it out and we're getting all these offers today, actually, so it will be a movie or a TV show of some sort. And hopefully become a big series. So we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
That's very exciting. Congratulations. I got to ask you about Bitcoin Billionaires, because that's probably my favorite book that you've written. Is that going to be made
into a
movie?
Bitcoin Billionaires is set up as a movie. We haven't put out, you know, any official sort of news about who is making it or what, but we were about to announce something when all of this craziness went down. So when Hollywood thaws out a little bit, we're going to make an announcement about that movie. But Bitcoin Billionaires, for people who don't know, is the story of the Winklevoss twins and their rise from being the bad guys in The Social Network to who they are today, which is they're worth billions of dollars. They own 200,000 Bitcoin, and a single Bitcoin is now worth almost $10,000. So they've got a couple billion in Bitcoin. And it makes you rethink who they are, because in The Social Network, they were the big dumb jocks who were rowing their way, and, you know, Mark Zuckerberg was the evil nerd, and that was the battle. But the reality is very different. And now Mark Zuckerberg is kind of evil, and the twins have become these revolutionaries in this new form of money. So it's a cool story, and we are going to make the movie as soon as everything, you know, gets back to filming. Yeah.
That's so exciting. So do you know if Arnie?
The Army would be awesome. You know, there's only a few people out there who could play the Winklevoss twins. You know, you've got to be big and in shape, but also really be able to come across as smart. And there's also the sort of, I mean, they're, you know, they're the Greek gods kind of. I mean, they walk on the screen.
Yeah. And you're playing
right.
Two people.
And Army Hammer did it very, very well. So we would love to see Army do it again. But it's going to depend on who the director is, what the script looks like. And Army, since The Social Network, has done so many great films. He's really grown into a great actor. So I would love to see this. But the Winklevi are not who you think they are. And that's kind of what's cool about this story, is they're not the dumb jocks. You know, they're not just the men of Harvard. These are guys who studied economics. There's guys who speak five languages. You know, they're Olympic rowers, so they have the ability to train and stuff like that. But they're really smart guys. So it's an interesting sort of way of looking at them again.
Now, what got me into your books was actually The Social Network, because for some reason I am fascinated with the entire story of Facebook. And so then after I saw the movie, I read your book, and then that led me to read Bringing Down the House and Bitcoin Billionaires. And now I'm reading Straight Flus, which is, I love it. I'm about halfway through right now. You write so many books about what I deem such cool things, whether it be Bitcoin, technology, Facebook, card counting. What is it about those things that makes you want to write about?
Yeah, so I'm really into people who kind of are going against authority in one way or another, not like criminals, you know, but people who are using their brains or abilities to beat the system. That's always the kind of story I look for. So people who kind of think outside the box, they're not, you know, just getting a job and going forward, but they come up with an idea like Facebook, or they find this secret world like card counting, and they hit Vegas and make millions. Straight Flush is about a group of college kids who figured out online game. They created an online poker site before, you know, today that's normal. But back when they did it, this was a brand new thing. It wasn't necessarily legal. And they moved to Costa Rica with their fraternity to try and create this thing. And I love these people who are making millions of dollars a day doing something crazy and a little shady sometimes. But the fun of it is the sort of adventure of changing the world, you know, just using your brain or some sort of skill set or something like that. It's just, you know, I live vicariously through these characters, which, you know, I want my reader to.
So do I, which is why I love your
books. You can dive inside and, you know, let's hit Vegas. But in real life, if I go hit Vegas, I'm going to get clobbered. but when you read the book, you know, you see people who actually did it. And these are all true stories, which is kind of what's cool about them. So, yeah, I get pitches, you know, people just send me stories and I look through them and try and find characters who've really done something unreal, you know, and follow them around.
Well, if you ever want to write a book about two reality TV has-beens, you got your people right there.
I mean, you know, there's definitely a story in that, but hopefully you guys don't end up in jail. Like when you take down some big thing like Vegas, I'm going to be there and follow that story for sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, you never know where the story is going to come from. The Zuckerberg story, you know, when I wrote that, it was 2007. Facebook was not in all of our lives yet. It was really just getting started, but there was this crazy drama between Mark and Eduardo and the Winklevi twins. I mean, you couldn't invent those guys if you wanted to. That whole scenario of them battling for something that became a multi-billion dollar company, it's really intense. So, you know, that came out of nowhere to me, and you never know where these stories are gonna come from.
Oh no, it's fascinating. Like you said, I love your book so much because I also live vicariously through your characters, because I would never have the balls to do those things, but I want to so badly. Like, I want to be the person, like even like Zuckerberg early in the days, where like he was so focused on getting Facebook to be this huge successful company, and nothing was going to stop in his way. And I just envy that so much. And also a fun story about you is that you put yourself through these weird scenarios, even, I'm not saying unlawful scenarios, but like, I heard a story about you, because you wanted to immerse yourself into what your characters went through. You smuggled, and you write it in the book, and bring it down the house, you smuggled like $250,000 to the airport like that?
Technically, it's not illegal to move your own money through an airport. However, if you get caught by the TSA with a couple hundred thousand dollars in a duffel bag, it looks really bad, and you will probably end up in handcuffs at some point. So, you know, to feel like I was in the story, I would carry money with the MIT blackjack team, and you'd go through, usually you carry a lot of it in chips, because the TSA doesn't know that chips are money. You know, they just think you're going to a poker game or something. But you would wear Velcro. And this was, you have to remember, today security is a lot different than it was when I wrote Bringing Down the House. But you used to be able to wear money belts, and you could put money in your pant legs, and you would carry money all over yourself like the Michelin Man. And you'd go to Vegas and you'd go to the bathroom and you would trade money out from, you know, under the stalls in the bathroom and things like that. So it's like method writing, you know, how actors are method acting. I'm a method writer. So I dive inside whatever the story is and try and figure it out, you know, from the inside. That's what's fun about writing. Writing itself is not fun. You know, sitting in a room for 8 hours a day for 3 months is the least fun you could possibly have. But researching the stories and following these characters around, and, you know, I wrote Bringing Down the House in Vegas over 14 days, literally staying in a different casino every night. With the MIT Blackjack team. And, you know, those are experiences that really are just awesome as a writer to be able to have. So, yeah.
Do you get writer's block?
I never have writer's block. So a writer's block to me is you're not writing the right thing often, or you started in the wrong place. Usually you'd have to go backwards. I have all these tricks and systems and things like that to get around stalling. So I don't have writer's block once I start a project. It's between projects often, I'm searching for the right story. So months can go by when you're watching Saved by the Bell over and over again. But you know, once you like figure out a story that really is compelling and crazy, I dive in and I write it. Like the Mechanic, for instance, literally wrote in 2 weeks because we were putting chapters up every night in the Globe. So that kind of thing, you can't stall. You know, if you stall, the whole thing's gonna fall apart. And so I write very quickly and there's no chance of that happening. It's about choosing the right story and finding the right characters and seeing yourself. I'm very cinematic. So I'm basically writing movies as books. So I actually sell the movie before I write the book. I write a 14-page treatment. Oh. So it's basically, I tell the story in 14 pages. I take it out to Hollywood. I land it at some studio somewhere. Then I sell the book and then I write the book. So I already know when I'm writing the book, there's at least the potential of a movie. So I'm thinking of it with actors in mind. I'm really writing the book, thinking it through like that. And that makes it a lot more fun.
I love that because that's probably why I love your book so much, because they are so dramatic and cinematic. And I as a movie buff, I love it. So last question before you go, this is a dating podcast. You've been married for 13 years. So tell us.
Tanya, come on here. My wife is here. She's going
to
get on.
Of course, please. We'd love to hear from Tanya.
Yeah, Tanya's here. This is Tanya. She's way out of my league. So it's as if I went on The Bachelor and I won somehow by hypnotism or one of these little skill sets. Tanya and I, we dated for a number of years before we got married. And I was never great. I'm sure you guys had a much easier high school and college experience than I did, and dating experience. I don't know. I would be amazed. But I was never that good at it. But I was persistent, I think. Persistence is the key, right? Yeah.
Yes. I mean, as Ashley's husband, I can attest to that. Persistence is key. But my question for you guys before you go is just, do you have one piece of advice for the listeners out there about how to keep a marriage going after 13 years?
Wow, how to keep a marriage going after 13 years.
Separate bathrooms.
I mean, the whole thing when I got married, and people say this to everyone who gets married, you know, happy wife, happy life. And the reality is the happier she is, the happier you will be. And so if you attempt to make yourself happy, it's never going to work if she's not happy. So you really do have to make allowances for that daily. And, you know, it's like keeping a plant happy, right? You got to water it every day.
lots of nice handbags.
Right, handbags. It helps, yes. It helps. But no, honestly, I think you need to pick the right person. I think that is the key to this whole thing. Like, you know, even if it takes you longer to get there, you know, I'm telling the people on The Bachelor who have to do this in how many episodes, but the reality is rushing in isn't necessarily the best answer. It's finding that person who really works with you, and you have to be partners. So when you're dating someone, I think you should be thinking about, if you're thinking long-term, is this person going to be a partner? Like all the authors that I know are incredibly jealous of what she does for my career. I would be in sweatpants sitting in a room 24 hours a day and have never had the career that I had. Tanya is the one who makes sure I'm out there, my book is out there. And so having a partner who is your secret weapon is really key, both for women and for men. Think of that person as, that's a partner. It's not someone, you know, there, you have to be a pair in everything, I think. So it works for us. Yeah.
No. I think that's awesome advice. And Ben and Tanya, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. To all the listeners out there, go check out The Mechanic. It is currently on the Boston Globe right now. You can subscribe. I subscribed. It's $4 for the whole month. So check out The Mechanic. All 21 chapters are on there right now. It's an incredible story, very National Treasure-esque. And then also check out Bitcoin Billionaires, which was, you can kind of like a sequel to The Accidental Billionaires, about the Winklevoss twins getting into Bitcoin very early. It's fascinating, especially in today's world, learning more and more about Bitcoin. So check those out. You can get that Amazon, anywhere you buy books, really. And Ben, again, thanks for
coming
on.
Thank you. We are fans, so I'm excited to be here. Thank you very much.
All right, we're back from our break. Jared, how was that for you? Because you are obviously a huge fan. I'm a big fan. I admittedly have never read any of his books, but I'm a big fan of the movie renditions. Obviously, 21 and Social Network are two huge movies. Fan of those. So what was it like for you to be able to talk to a guy that you admire so much?
Dude, it was awesome. He's super nice. And I've seen a lot of interviews with him. And it's funny because the picture, like his author picture that's always on his book, is like him with a leather jacket and glasses. And he's got like an interesting look to him. And you're like, is this guy like, what is this guy like? And so it was so awesome meeting him and just realizing that he's so down to earth and super just like a normal
dude. He was
so
nice.
And it's so funny that he's a Bachelor fan. You never know who watches the freaking show. Like what a fan of somebody that I've been a fan of for so long watches the show, knows who I am. And like things like this are able to happen because of that. And it's freaking the coolest thing, man. But like, I remember watching The Social Network. I watched it in Boston the weekend it came out. And like, I wasn't into Facebook. I wasn't a big social media guy. And I was like, we'll see. I walked to that theater and I loved that movie so much. And I obviously read The Accidental Billionaires, which he wrote, and The Bitcoin Billionaires, which is like somewhat of a sequel. I just recently read over this quarantine a book called The Facebook Effect, which is literally marketed as the true story to The Social Network, with interviews from, it's mostly like an interview from Mark Zuckerberg that this guy wrote about. But dude, it's fascinating. He's a great writer. And like you said, he writes everything cinematically. So it does feel very dramatic while reading the book, which I love because the stakes are high and he writes about things that are in my mind the coolest things, like I said, card counting and poker and Bitcoin and technology and social media, things that I am captivated by. So it was cool, man. It was so cool. Like that dude right there wrote a book that Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher created a screenplay off of and got nominated for Best Picture. Like that's awesome.
I was just about to say, it's funny with it must be incredible to write a book basically knowing that it's going to be made into a movie, like he did with Bitcoin Billionaires. He's like, well, there is nothing to announce yet, but there I wrote it what does he say, cinematically, and so it's basically guaranteed to be made into a movie. Like that's just a pretty crazy thing to think about, you know.
That's awesome. But yeah, so it wasn't about dating. So I apologize to all the audience members, all the listeners, that it wasn't really that much about dating. But at the same time, it was really cool. And I hope everybody listened, found it very interesting and engaging and something different. And sorry, I went over
it
7 minutes.
That heavenly. You had to last as long as you could. I get it, man. Hey, should we do an email before we say goodbye for this week?
Yes, obviously. Definitely. Most certainly. The best part. Please keep your emails coming.
Yeah. Okay, I love that enthusiasm out of you. Well, this one kind of sounds similar to what we talked about last week. Essentially, what's happened is this girl is dating a guy. They've been dating for 1.5 years. It's from Samantha. They're temporarily doing long distance, but her boyfriend is a big surfer. And once, not too long ago, while he was surfing, he met a girl who was surfing by herself. She asked for his Instagram handle. She then DM'd him later on and asked if he would like to go surfing with her. This guy the whole time has made it clear that he has a girlfriend. He even told his girlfriend, who is our emailer, that, you know, he met this girl who was just wanting to surf, and now she's hitting him up to surf again, just them two.
her question is, or Samantha said in the moment that it was fine for him to do this, to meet up with this girl to surf with her. However, she's not sure how to feel about it now. So she's asking us, Jared, do we think it's appropriate for someone in a relationship to hang with someone of the opposite sex alone? And on the flip side of it, would it be appropriate for someone to tell their significant other to hang out with someone of the opposite sex? So I guess to kind of put it all in together quickly, because we talked about this last week a little bit, but this is a different situation because it's not like a friend who was kind of grandfathered in before
a previous friend.
Right. It's someone that they've met recently that's asking to hang out one-on-one. What do you think about it?
It's a gray area. I think what it comes down to is making sure that your significant other is friends with this person. That's like the main purpose here, what I'm getting behind. Like, for example, everybody says like, oh, Jared, you have a best friend that's a girl. I'm like, yeah, but her and Ashley now are like best friends. And she sees our dynamic and how it's brother and sister like. So this significant other, Samantha, needs to hang out with this girl and the boyfriend at the same time. The boyfriend needs to like overcompensate during the moment and be like, okay, I'm always going to have my arm around you. I'm always going to be holding your hand. I'm going to show that like I love you. You're the girl for me. This other person is just a friend. And then maybe you can start feeling comfortable about it. But until that happens, then I don't know.
I got to say, I disagree with you on this one. So I think in the sense of them hanging out, it's totally okay for them to do if every time they hang out, they're surfing. If it's like, hey, come over to my house and watch a movie, probably not going to fly. But if they met surfing, they have a shared interest that is surfing. It's better to surf with a friend than it is to surf alone. So I don't see the harm in like, hey, I'm going to go surfing with this person. Like, okay, so, and maybe the reason I'm justifying it this way is because sometimes I'll get DMs from girls but it's obviously we get DMs from girls, right? It's a very well-known fact that we're both in relationships, but sometimes people who are like interested in rock climbing or like, I remember after Paradise was done filming, this girl was like, hey, I live up in Seattle. If you're ever up in the area, let's go rock climbing or something like that. If I'm by myself and I want to go rock climbing, like you need a partner to rock climb with. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to hang out with this person to rock climb. You know what I mean? So I think if you have like a shared interest, in this case, it's surfing. In my case, it'd be rock climbing or skydiving or whatever it might be. I think it's totally okay. But I don't think that Samantha, if you ever hear your boyfriend say something like, hey, this girl is going to come over and watch a movie with me, that's the red flag and that's cause for concern. But in the case of surfing, I don't think it's a big deal at all.
I agree. If it escalates, you have a big problem. My only concern with what you're saying is like Samantha being the significant other has to trust that that other girl doesn't have ulterior motives.
I don't think it's about the other girl at all. I think it's just about her boyfriend. If her boyfriend, can she trust her boyfriend or not? You know what I mean? Like, for instance, again, all I can do is relate it back to my scenarios. Like, I know that I would never do anything with any girl other than Kaylin. So I don't have any interest in being like, yeah, let's go rock climb. If this guy is 100% in on his girlfriend, who for the record, they've been dating longer than Kaylin and I have, then he has not even a single desire to do anything that's, you know, considered promiscuous or whatever. So if she has reason to believe that she should be uncomfortable, then maybe there's something underlying there. But I personally don't think that it's an issue.
Let me ask you this. What is Kaylin like doing? What's like one of her hobbies?
She's learning the ukulele.
Okay, so what if some dude, random dude, DM'd her and said, hey, listen, I know you're in a relationship. I also play the ukulele and I'd love to learn side by side so we can kind of get better at this together. Would you mind if like we go to a public place, like it could be a coffee shop, whatever, and we just kind of like go back and forth and learn how to play the ukulele?
I see what you're doing. I got to say that's a little bit different of a situation. But I would be totally okay with it. I don't see why not. Like, again, I have full and utter to the utmost trust, more than I could trust anyone else in the world with Kaylin. I know that she would never do anything to hurt me physically or emotionally. So I would have no issue with her going to a coffee shop with a guy to play the ukulele, because I know that her intention is to improve at the ukulele and to have someone to work on that with and not to hook up with anyone else. You know what I mean?
I think for me, it's not so much a trust thing as it is a jealousy thing. And maybe I'm just a jealous guy and that's not a healthy habit to have. But if Ashley was going like weekly with this other dude that I didn't really know or didn't know at all to like do something that she's very passionate about, it's not like, no, I trust you. I just don't trust them. And and it just makes me jealous. That's all. Like, not say I would tell her not to do it, but if it became like a weekly thing and I like did not know the person, I'd be like, I don't know how comfortable I feel about this. Not that I don't trust you, but that dude could go screw.
No, I guess that makes sense too.
I don't know. There's not a right answer.
In the world of like surfing and doing like these like activities outside that are like less intimate and more about the experience than they are about the company.
Is surfing less
like going
intimate?
To a coffee shop and like playing ukulele? It's a hobby.
It's definitely a hobby.
I don't know. I don't think it's an issue, but like, I think we're on the same page with saying, hang out with them. See if you, well, it's long distance, so I guess you can't hang out with them at the time, but I don't think that you should. Okay. And here's another example. If Kaylin was like, look, I don't want you to meet up with that person to rock climb, I would kind of be like, well, what's the deal? You don't trust me, or like, you don't want me to like go do this. Like, I don't understand. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know what sucks about the social distancing right now? You're right. Cause she even says in the email that I forgot about that they're doing long distance right now because of the pandemic. And that would cause some unease on my end, because then the person that you're dating, you're not only not hanging out with them, but they're actively hanging out with another girl. And while you trust them, it's just like this little small voice in the back of your head being like, don't let them do it. Like, this is not good. This is not good. So it's hard. It's not easy. Relationships aren't easy between jealousy and it's very complicated. So I wish we had a better answer for Samantha.
I will say, if you asked me the same question like 2 or 3 years ago, or four, you know, however long ago, probably even any time before my current relationship, I would say it's okay for you to be like a little worried about it. But now, like, I hate making this all about me, but like, I'm in a relationship now more comfortable in this relationship than I ever have been before. So my mindset is always like, yeah, do the thing that makes you happy. I don't, you know, if I can do it with you, I will. But if I can't, I want you to be able to do it with other people that share that same interest as you. So go do that. And it's just like a level of trust for me now is I've never had before. So hopefully Samantha can have that with her boyfriend without having to feel guilty for telling him not to hang out with someone, because I know she wants him to be surfing and having fun, you know?
Do you think it'd be bad if Samantha said, I don't want you to stop doing this, but I also wouldn't mind if you just made me feel comfortable while going, you know, while you do this, whether it be just like, you know, like FaceTiming her from the beach or, you know, talking to her while he's there.
That's a good way to compromise, I guess, would be like FaceTime me in when you get there. So I can meet her, not like in a weird way, but just be like, oh, like, hey, like you're my boyfriend's new surfing buddy. Like, it's nice to meet you. You know what I mean? And then that way, like, obviously everyone knows who's in the relationship, but it's always good. Once you put a face to the other person's significant other, I think that like really ingrains the idea in, you know what I mean? So I think it's a really good idea. By doing that, it's like, okay, there's not going to be any funny business either way. Like, she can kind of rest easy. And then the girl that he's surfing with can be like, okay, like now that I have a face to the guy's girlfriend, I am 100% certain that this isn't going to be anything romantic, you know?
Yeah, and certainly can't hurt. Thank you so much for listening to a new episode of Help I Suck at Dating. Thank you, of course, to Ben Mesrick for coming on the podcast. Check out, once again, his The Mechanic, which is on the Boston Globe, all 21 chapters. Also by his book, Bitcoin Billionaires, which is one of my favorites. Thank you so much, Dean, for opening up during your 7 minutes of heaven. I hope this is something that can continue to happen, because I found yours very interesting. I hope people found mine somewhat interesting. But I've already started like brainstorming things that I kind of want to talk about and get off my chest and during our 7 minutes of heaven.
They're heavenly.
Tori, thank you so much for showing up. You're amazing as always. Thank you to Amy for employing us. Thank you for all the dedicated listeners. We appreciate and are so grateful for you. Thank you for the emails, because those are our favorite parts of the podcast, listening from you. Make sure you follow us on all social channels. We are on Facebook and, more importantly, Instagram. We are at Help I Suck at Dating, so you can definitely follow us there. And is there anybody I'm missing?
Samantha, for emailing us, don't forget to email us at isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com. We want to hear your stories. We want to know what's going on in your lives. It helps us connect with you. Even if we give these non-answer answers like we did just then, it still hopefully helps you guys in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always best to give a non-answer answer because we don't want to tell you exactly what to do because honestly, we don't know what the hell we're doing either. We're just trying to help. We're all just trying to get through this life together. You know, that's it. We're all in this together, guys. So make sure you listen next week to an all-new episode where hopefully we all suck a little less.
Follow Help by Suck at Dating on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.